It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as usual, live and in color. For those of you with colored radios, that doesn't work very well, does it?
Does not.
You're better off anyway. You don't have to look at me. So anyway, welcome back to all our regulars. And if you're new to the show, either on purpose or by accident listening, try to stick around for the hour. We will promise you that you will learn something or other, and it'll probably, not guaranteed, but probably will be useful at some stage of your life. And, of course, we will talk about all the things we want to talk about unless you do something about it by changing the subject, and you do that by simply picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK. And you will go to the head of the line, and we will discuss whatever is on your mind, financially, preferably, but not always, although almost everything these days winds up hitting you in the pocketbook somehow. So pretty hard to come up with a subject that doesn't involve money once in a while. And there is a lot of it out there and a lot of ways to use it better and blow it and all those things. And in fact, my local star of radio and television got to talk about that a little bit on the local news this week. And I think the topic is worthwhile to discuss it. Why don't you, oh, by the way, I'm talking about this guy that's sitting across from me.
That would be me.
That would be him. Why don't you summarize a little bit? I was telling Adam I liked what he said because it made a lot of sense, and it's not a viewpoint I had heard before.
Yeah, so I was contacted by First Coast News on Wednesday, and we set up an interview for Thursday morning, which aired on Friday, all day apparently, because some people texted me in the morning that they saw me, some people in the afternoon.
Well, good. Yeah. More exposure is better than less.
Yeah, so what the topic was student loans, and there was recently an extension on the sort of moratorium on them. So what that meant was that no payments are due until February of next year, and the interest rate was reduced to zero on all federal loans. So that means that basically for the last, I think, 14 months and the next six, seven months that you don't have to make payments on federal student loans. And the reporter was asking, what should you do with that money? Well, it really depends what type of repayment plan you're on. So if you are on a standard repayment plan, meaning that you intend to pay the loan off in full over a certain period of time by making payments, I think that if you can afford it, you should continue making payments, because with a zero interest rate, 100% of your payment then goes towards principal, and you actually end up paying it off sooner by doing nothing different than you would have done anyway. That's if you remain employed and still have the same income and coronavirus really hasn't affected you. But if you're on an income-based repayment plan, which is one where they take a look at your income, a certain percentage of that gross income is all you're allowed to make as a payment towards that loan. Those and then they're forgiven after 20 or 25 years. If you're on one of those, you should definitely not make a payment, because these payments that you don't make actually count towards your time to pay off the loan. So whether you make the payment or not, you're still getting the credit for having made the payment. So why would you make the payment? It doesn't make any sense. If you did, you'd just end up paying more towards that loan that would eventually be forgiven anyway. So in that case, what you want to do is look at your situation and say, I have credit card debt, or I don't, or any kind of high interest debt, short-term debt. If you do, pay that off. Use that money that you would have paid towards your student loans to pay off that short-term high-interest credit card debt. Now, if you don't carry that, there's another option. If you're a renter, it's a great time to buy. And a lot of people struggle to come up with a down payment in this market. Why don't you put that money in a savings account and use it towards a down payment on a house? Because rents are skyrocketing right now, haven't noticed. And mortgages are actually pretty cheap, considering that you can get money at historically low interest rates, as Angela was just talking about on my way in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a great time to buy.
That would have been a great rate for your permanent private residence that guy was talking about getting an investment loan at 3.5%.
I know, and I recently looked at refining an investment property, and I got the same quote.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you're looking at a personal property right now, they're incredible rates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just refied into a 15-year and got below 1.8%, if you can believe that.
That's just... Yeah, I continue to be astounded by the numbers I keep hearing.
I know. It's pretty insane. I doubt that we will see this anytime again in the near future.
I will eat my words if you're wrong, because I yeah, absolutely agree.
And I hope, I mean, I would like to get back to a more, quote-unquote, normal interest rate.
Yeah, so as soon as us and all of our friends, as soon as we're all fixed up with our mortgages, jack them up.
yeah, you're the I got mine and shut it up, close the border, we moved to Florida. Yeah, exactly. No one else can come. It was a fun interview to do, and I'm used to doing radio by now, but TV is always a little more nerve-wracking. Yeah. So you know it's a little bit, I was nervous that I wouldn't say the right thing, but I guess I did okay.
Yeah, I was very happy with the whole thing, and they got our logo and name spelled right.
Nice. She did ask me several times, so I tried to get it right.
Yeah, and Adam's had a little more background than he might have let on there, too, because he's one of that crew that does the annual Ask a Financial Planner thing on TV.
Well, I haven't done it in a few years because of coronavirus, but yeah.
Oh, that's right.
But I have been interviewed there, and I've done a little bit of TV, but nothing like the 7 years of radio that we've been doing.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to look natural. I've had a couple of instances like that. You know, they're the three things that people fear the most. Two of them are headed death, and one of those is public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as close to public speaking as you can get being on TV.
Actually, I think I'd rather speak in front of a large group than go in front of TV cameras for some reason.
Well, it's still things you can practice if you get the opportunity. But anyway, if you want to check it out and see them on TV, I imagine there's probably a way you can link to.
Yeah,
it's
on our Facebook page. It's on our Instagram.
Oh, there you go.
It should be, if it's not up on our website yet, it will be on Monday. And you can find it at any of those. Just Google our Facebook Vanuy Financial page, and you'll be able to find it.
Sure. Very good. Well, I thought it deserved a little discussion because, as I said, I thought it went very well. Anyway, back to this week in the market, which ended with a really strong high note, and we always love it when we go into the weekend with a nice strong finish. That means people would rather hold things over the weekend than get rid of them, and that means Monday morning they're probably not going to just dump them all.
Yeah, that's usually true. Not always.
But depends if there's bad news over the weekend, I guess.
Yeah.
Of course, it was all Fed-related, and they did the right thing, apparently.
Everything this week really revolved around Jackson Hole, which ended up being virtual, kind of a letdown after all the buildup.
Yeah.
But Powell said the right things. There was some pretty hawkish Fed members, and continues to be, and they're growing more hawkish.
Yeah.
But Powell came in and said that, yes, there will be tapering this year, but I don't think we'll see anything till late this year, and there's no hurry to do any rate hikes, which is really what the market wanted to hear.
He laid out conditions for rate hikes that mean it's just not happening.
No, it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
And we've said that for quite a while, that it's probably 2023 before we see one.
Yeah.
We think we'll need one at the end of next year, but...
Now, that's not to say I agree with the policy.
It is what it
is,
though.
I don't agree with the policy, but that... I can't fight the Fed anymore, and anybody else can fight the Fed.
Last time I checked, you were not a voter.
Exactly right. Well, we'll talk more about it after the break. Don't go anywhere. There's a lot to say. We'll be right back. This is the Vanuy Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanuy Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanuy.
And I'm Adam Vanuy.
And we have been talking about other things besides the market wrap, so we'll get right to that. But first, we are, as usual, having a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. There's been a lot of talk this year with the COVID and the stay homes and the reopenings and then the resurgence of COVID and all that about this work from home thing. So I'm on a little roll here for jobs, job changes. You know, the JOLTS number came in at 10.2 million jobs open. There are a lot of people not yet back to work from COVID. A got a lot of people still working at home, and now you're starting to see an interest in job changing. And it's no wonder to me, because salaries are going up. I got a couple articles here about employers are preemptively raising salaries because they fear that their people will go elsewhere. And I would say there's good reason for them to feel that way. So the question today is, what percentage of Americans who are currently working or job hunting are likely to look for a new job in the next 12 months? What percentage? And I'm not going to give any hints, except it's above zero.
Yep.
And below 100. So there you go. Yeah, I've bracketed it for everybody. It's up to you from here on in. And it appears, is it Ali or Ali?
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
We're fine. How are you?
Good, good. I got a smaller question here regarding to buying a house.
Yes.
Okay. I went to a couple times to do some shopping around the area, and realtors, like, they do asking questions like, you want to go this way or that way? And so my question is here, should I go through the bank directly to get approved first, pre-approved first, or should I go through a realtor? What do you think?
When you're shopping for a house, this might be a better question for Angela and Howard. I know that they would be happy to help you with this, but I have done enough house shopping in my day to know a thing or two about that. I think that both is appropriate. You need a realtor to help you find the house and negotiate and on your behalf, because buying a house is an extremely complicated process, and there are so many pitfalls and things that you don't even know about that can go wrong. And if you mess them up without representation, you can really put yourself in a financial bind. In order to buy the house, you are going to need to be pre-approved. Well, you don't need to be. It is strongly recommended.
If you want to get the house, you better be.
That you have pre-approval letter.
Any good realtor right now, and Angela and Howard will back me up on this, I'm sure the first thing they're going to ask you is, A, what's your price range, and B, what are you pre-approved for?
Right.
And if you're not pre-approved, they'll say, go get pre-approved and we'll talk, because if you walk in and want to make an offer and you're not pre-approved, the next guy's going to get it from you.
Oh, yeah. If you're a buyer and you have multiple offers, one's pre-approved and one isn't, I know which one I'm going to choose.
Oh, done.
Yeah.
Yep. You don't want to have that in there. So I think, I definitely agree it's a two-pronged approach, and they're equally important.
Yes, I agree. And pre-approval is really not as complicated as you might think. If you just need to prove a few pretty basic things like your income and the amount of assets that you have, recent statements from banks and a W-2 or a pay stub or a couple of pay stubs, and very little more than that is required to get a pre-approval. They just want to make sure you are who you say you are and you make as much money as you claim to make.
Both of which are very reasonable, I think.
Yeah.
And if you get started on it and have technical questions, you can always call Howard and Angela the hour before us on Saturday, and they'll be happy to help. Or if you're looking for a realtor, you know they're readily available. And if you have one, just be sure they're reputable. And then go have some fun. It's a little easier now from everything I hear than it was a while back. There's not quite so much competition out there. And still, the number one thing, which we were talking about a little bit ago, is that mortgage rates are so good right now. It's just a wonderful time to go out and shop.
Yep. Yes.
Let us know if you have success.
Did you want to take? Good. Thank you. Did you want to take a shot at our trivia question?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm just listening to you guys.
Okay. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
A great weekend. Be an exciting time to go house shopping, I would think.
Better than a few months ago, where it probably was pretty frustrating.
Right. You know, people getting back into school and stuff, I think the overall demand from the summer moves and all might be tapering a little bit.
Yeah, that's what Angela has mentioned that several times.
Yeah, that's the word for the week, is tapering.
Yeah, I think people are...
Fed word, too.
People are starting to think about other things besides relocating these days, so
yep,
that's a good thing.
All right, this week in the market.
Yeah, this week in the market was kind of the opposite of last week, where the mood was sort of ugly last week. Everything was pretty good this week.
And that's incredible, given what went on in Kabul.
Yeah, it was an ugly, ugly day.
It was.
But that being said, those types of events don't typically rattle the market too much. Sure. Very, very short term, if at all. In this case, it was really, if at all, it didn't do much.
The market dropped a couple hundred points, came right back
up. Yeah, but I'm not even sure that was related. That was after a couple of strong days prior to that. So the terrible events over there, but really didn't affect the market very much. There was actually some really good news in the market this week. We saw strength in small caps, which we have not seen that in a while. They've rallied almost 7% in the last 7 trading days. The index is still lagging behind the S&P 500 for the past few months, but it made a lot of progress this week.
That's a really good sign.
Yeah, if it can catch up to where the S&P is, that would be an excellent sign for the rest of the year. So that's something we're keeping an eye on. Another thing we're keeping an eye on is COVID. It's driving a lot of trades these days, and it really affects market patterns and what gets hot at different times. But not in the way that you always expect. Prior to the current wave, the Delta variant wave that we're seeing right now, travel and entertainment stocks actually started slumping as demand started increasing. Now, why was that? Why would travel and entertainment stocks be slumping when everything seemed to be getting back to normal? Well, along comes the Delta wave, and there you go. That's why. Now, in the middle of the Delta wave, they've actually started to take off again.
Yeah,
so
strange, isn't it?
The market tends to trade about 6 months ahead of where we are today. I think it might be telling us that this is going to end at some point, or at least that is the feeling in the market. So it's interesting to watch, just knowing that a lot of times the market predicts things before they happen, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, the collective wisdom is quite amazing when it comes to the crystal ball look.
If you look at, and there are some signs out there, you have to look kind of hard, but two of the hot spots that started the Delta variant wave were Duval County, Florida, right mm-hmm. where we are, and Louisiana. And if you look at case counts in both of those spots, they're actually coming down. Over the last few weeks, they've come down in both locations, and they are trending down. So I have to think those are positive signs, but again, I'm done predicting anything about this crazy, disease that we're dealing with. So hopefully that's the correct thing.
I think one thing you can predict is that if it hasn't already ruined the market for this year, it probably won't.
Yeah, I don't think the market is. Companies find ways to deal with all sorts of crazy political, socioeconomic, different events that take place, disease type events.
Look what they did with the stay-at-home workers.
Yeah.
The number of people who went from going to an office every day to staying home every day, and they got their technology up to date right away, and a lot of things.
Now you can.
Zoom was instrumental in it.
I remember going to New York back in the early 2000s, and it was pretty amazing because you could order anything and have it delivered to your door. Now you can live in rural Kansas and have the same thing.
Exactly.
We've gotten delivery to the point where you never have to leave your house, no matter where you live. And so people adapt, the U.S. adapts, companies adapt, and no matter what happens in the rest of the year, I think that the same will be true.
And yet Amazon is opening up
department
stores.
Yeah, it's true.
They know something.
I guess.
They don't do anything unless they know something.
Yeah, it seems bizarre, but
it really does.
Yeah, maybe people are sick of getting deliveries. I don't know.
As they say, stay tuned, I guess.
I've heard of Zoom fatigue, but not delivery fatigue.
Really?
Commodities rallied in a big way this week, too, with oil leading the way higher.
Yep.
Oil gained 10%, which is a ton. I mean, it had been dropping pretty dramatically, mm-hmm. so it really just gained some of that lost ground. But that was a dramatic move. Gold was up 2%. Silver was up 4.6%.
They're both still down for the year.
Yep.
The year we're talking about inflation, and gold and silver just can't catch a break.
I was having this discussion with a client just yesterday, and he was asking if gold would be a good thing to invest in right now because of inflation. And honestly, if you go back and look at the last 10 years where we've seen a good amount of inflation, yep. gold's down about 5%.
Yeah. So I got to think of it as undervalued.
Either undervalued or it's not the inflation hedge that it used to be.
A lot of people are substituting crypto, things like that, for their hedges. And I'm telling you, gold and silver are risky, but they're not risky like crypto's risky.
They're risky in that they may not. Gold's been flat for 10 years, so exactly. It's risky in that you're putting money in something that you're not in the S&P 500, which is up. I don't even know, but a huge percentage in that time, 300%
Bitcoin is about 48,000, something like that, which is way up from where it was a little while ago, but it's down off of 64.
Mm-hmm.
All right, more after this short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm going to repeat the trivia question. What percentage of Americans who are currently working or job hunting are likely to look for a new job in the next 12 months? Good morning, Marshall.
And our range is from 0 to 100, right?
It is indeed.
He narrowed it down for you.
Yep.
50%,
says Marshall. And that, unfortunately, is just a little too low.
Very interesting.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm really surprised, by the way. You get an attaboy for coming within that kind of range, because Adam started out at 20% before the show when he was guessing, which I thought was a very reasonable estimate, and it's just not. Which is, you know me, I always like to come up with something that surprises me when I find out. But yeah, you're a little low about
if
that.
If there is a good thing, there are a lot of good people who have been underpaid, but weren't that astute in stepping out to find something, and they're going to get paid.
Yep.
Unfortunately,
you're absolutely right.
At the same time, there's a number of people who no more can do the job than fly to the moon. And they're getting paid right now because they're the only ones looking for that job. But this will all come back into balance at a certain point between competency and pay.
It's called the labor market. Where there's a market, it'll find its balance.
Well, I keep trying to remember this, and now I'm going to write. I'm sitting firmly in a place where I can write this down so I will not forget this name again. The gentleman who had the index of Market Basket.
It's no longer.
It is no longer?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
No, your favorite inflation indicator is no longer.
No. It's called the Chapwood Index, Ed Butowski. And he has discontinued it, and I have yet to figure out why. My version of it is that somebody got to him. And by somebody, I mean somebody with the power to make him be quiet. I don't understand it. He did an interview with someone. Can't remember who it was, in March, and I'm about halfway through listening to the thing. It's long. It's about 45 minutes, and that hasn't come up yet, and at least the reason for discontinuance has not come up yet, and I need to finish that out and find out, because I learned a lot out of this, and part of it was he was developing the index. He was explaining all the little vagaries of the CPI and the, what do they call the other one, the Fed has their own that's lower CPE or something like that, consumption. Okay. But anyway, he explained how they continually manipulate things to come up with a number that sounds good to them, and how his technique was to measure the same product in the same place twice a year and use that as the difference or the change. And there literally is no place over the years that was under about 8%, and most of them were 10 or 11, 12, some were higher than that. And why it's not done anymore, you know from listening to the show for a long time that I've talked about this many, many, many times over the years, and now it's gone. So I'm hoping there's some reason, some interim reason perhaps, but I will let you know I do have to finish that interview again.
Would it be a reasonable item that your guru there could put the link on the Facebook page so the rest of us could watch it?
I would certainly think so. I'll find it and send it to him and let you know next week that it's on there if we can get it. Yeah, and hopefully at the same time I'll get the answer.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Marshall, thank you. You had a very good guess. I like the fact that you're thinking all the time. It's a good thing for everybody. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Actually, thinking causes work.
Go ahead.
Actually, thinking causes those cells to have to work occasionally.
Yes, you're right.
If you and I don't do a better job of that, they will disappear.
You got that right.
Thank you.
And I'm not taking any medicine for it.
Yeah.
So there. Bye-bye. Yeah, that was a very good guess. But you all know me. I like to make people think if I can with our trivia questions. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are we?
Wonderful. You?
I'm hanging in there, you know, except for the tragedy with Afghanistan.
Yeah. We got names and faces this morning for a bunch of them. And
I saw that.
It really makes it personal.
Yes, without a doubt. All we could do is pray.
Yep.
On a lighter note, I'd like to take a stab at the trivia question.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say, based on Marshall's answer, which I believe was a little low, 55%.
You are the amazing Mike.
I don't know about that. But
I wasn't given any leeway either.
No, you didn't.
I was going to do the number itself, and it is exactly 55%, and that makes you the winner. This was done, let's see, that was IRS numbers, I believe. I'm not sure. I got one of two things here was IRS. That one may have been a different survey, but it was exactly 55%. Do you think about that? If you're an employer out there and you got a bunch of people and you can guess that 55% of them on average are out looking for a new job, you better make darn sure that your pay range is in the ballpark, because otherwise you're going to be trying to replace these people, and as Marshall said, you're going to have some that aren't worth what you have to pay and some that are underpaid now. This is a good time for employers to really, really concentrate on what it takes to retain people in a job market that is absolutely on fire.
That's true. Absolutely true. I was a little surprised to see that the jobless numbers went up slightly.
Just ticked up. They've been still in a general downtrend, but there has been a few week over week increases in the last few months. I wouldn't get too concerned about the weekly numbers. Look at the trend, and it's definitely down right now. Yeah, so
absolutely.
I think we're still headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and there's another little anomaly coming up here in the job market too, because the jobs numbers come out next week for August. And what happened in August is that all of the states that had cut off their $300 a week extra payments, they did that before. So there were no changes in that in August. So the people who are still getting it are still getting it. But on September 6th, it's over. So I think you're going to see a disappointing jobs report next week. This is my prediction, because people didn't feel the need to go back to work yet. Whereas the one we get for September in the first week of October might be stellar, because so many people, something like 25 states, are cutting out those payments on the 6th. And unless our very gracious Uncle Sam decides that he is going to continue it carte blanche, then people are going to have to go back to work. Pretty simple.
Related to that, if I could just say quickly, the Supreme Court decision just the other day, which I understand struck down Biden and the CDC, which wanted to allow people to not have to pay their rent. I believe they struck that down.
Yep, the score is landlord 1 and Biden 0.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, America works when everybody's working, in my opinion. So that's it. Gentlemen, have a great weekend.
Thank you. We have his name and number, right?
Make sure.
Okay, I'll
hold.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I really think you're going to see what you might call a disruption or disappointment in the August numbers, but September, hopefully, we get back to normal.
Yeah, I don't know what the August will look like. It'll be an interesting report to watch.
The Biden economic plan is undo all the good things Trump did, and then one by one take them to the Supreme Court and reinstate them. It's just been working so far.
Yeah,
absolutely. Let's see. We got about a minute left here. I had a question to Adam that I thought was interesting. In the Russell 3000 holds almost every traded stock there is. What was the best performing stock in the last 10 years that's part of the Russell? And I brought up Tesla because, that's going to be really cool. And come to find out, it was only third. Then Adam said Monster. And Monster is a drink, a energy drink, I guess, made by a company called Celsius Holdings.
I think that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, and that Celsius was actually number two. And the winner is something that I was not familiar with. It's a company called XPEL, X-P-E-L. And they make films that protect things like auto paint and windows and boat interiors. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Now, I need to issue a slight correction. We were talking about the top performing stocks over the last 10 years in the Russell 3000 Index. And I had stated my choice, Tesla, which was just a piker. It only returned 14,673% in those 10 years. So that was third. And Adam picked Monster, which he thought was part of Celsius. But actually, it's not. Celsius replaced Monster on this
list. Yeah.
On this list.
Yeah.
And Celsius Holdings, which I don't even know what brand names they have. Maybe it goes
Celsius,
under Celsius.
Yeah, it does go under Celsius. Okay. I've never heard of it.
No, I haven't either. But I don't drink a lot of energy drinks, which is
nor
probably readily apparent to most people. Anyway, their total 10-year return is 31,452%. But occupying the apex is XPEL, X-P-E-L. They have coatings that protect windows, auto paint, boat interiors. Who knew? Huh? Total return over 10 years, 106,028%.
Man.
I wish. But wishing doesn't make you money. Investing makes you money. And some of you are investing by yourself, and others are working with financial advisors, and others are probably right in between and thinking of working with advisors. What do you need to know? Had an interesting little thing that I found on the internet this week, whereas there were just a list of the things that the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, has come down on certain advisors with fines and so on. And this was on one little web page right in the middle of whatever the heck I was reading. And here's a few of them. SEC charges San Antonio advisor in $58 million investment scam. Next, SEC fines, I'm not giving out the names, advisors over 12B1 fees. Next, SEC bars X, again, no name, rep who stole more than $600,000 from a retired client. Then SEC finds robo-advisor, again, name deleted, over EFT conflicts. And then SEC orders advisory firm to pay $9 million over short sales. Now, that's quite a bit of trouble for one little time period, isn't it? Now, Adam and I always like to say sort of jokingly that the perfect client for somebody like us is the person who comes in, we do quarterly meetings, so it'd be a quarterly meeting, and says, how am I doing? And then we joke that there are no perfect clients, although there are some that are pretty close. But you can't take that attitude by if you're just walking into someone you don't know unless you've done your due diligence. Now, obviously, our people who are the easiest going have done a lot of due diligence and been with us a lot of years. But selecting a good advisor or the right advisor for you is a two-way street. It is, you cannot just simply listen to what the advisor says and say, oh, that's cool, we'll do that. But everything is about prevention. You have to protect yourself from those. It's not that many, but there are always going to be bad advisors out there, like there are bad practitioners and everything you can think of. So I'm just going to give you some hints what you can look for. In the first one, that $58 million investment scam, the advisor was having his retired clients come in and sell their life insurance policies and annuity policies. Why? To put the money into two funds that he supposedly advised. Now, those funds were not listed investments. You can't go type in the number on Yahoo or Google Finance or anything like that and find them. They're private. And, of course, he was advising them in a manner whereby he advised himself to take a few hundred thousand out and give himself a couple of weddings and a divorce and a car and a boat, all those things. And there was no way that these people could see that the money was vanishing from their accounts because they weren't on an independent third-party website where you could see it 24 hours a day. So if your advisor or potential advisor tells you that you can't do it, you have to get your statements from that advisor, then if I were you, I would probably pack up and don't walk away, run away. If you can't see it, don't count on it being there. Headline number two, this was about an advisor who was selling commission mutual funds who carried 12B1 fees. Now, for those of you who don't know what a 12B1 fee is, it's an annual fee, usually a quarter of a percent, that's tacked on to the mutual fund, in other words, deducted from the mutual fund's performance every year in order to, quote, sell the fund or advertise the fund so that they'll sell more of it so that the things in the fund will go up and their business will get bigger. What the SEC has been all over this. I have been now a CFP for about 20 years and 4 months. And from the day I started in here, 12B1 fees were shunned by the SEC. Little by little, people have been dropping them, and some people have been ordering them dropped. This one was still doing it. And if you're paying, if you look in any of your holdings and you find a fund that has a 12B1 fee on it, call your advisor and say, no, no, no. You don't have to pay these things. Now, quite frankly, there are very, very few mutual funds that are worth paying anything to buy and sell them, much less a 12B1 fund. There are some that are so good, and even some that we use,
two or three,
that we actually will pay, not a regular commission, but a cost like a $20 to get it or whatever, but the performance gets that back for you. And if we could find something better, we would move to it. All right, headline three, another one who just sort of subtracted money and from the client's accounts and put it in his. And these were large sums of money, like $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 that would just happen once in a while. And you've got to be able to catch that. So part of your responsibility is once you do get on a web page and see what's going on, if there are unexplained withdrawals from your accounts, you got to say something. The fourth example was a robo-advisor. And for those of you who don't know what those are, have you got a very quick explanation for a robo-advisor?
Yeah, it's just an it's an algorithm that it puts you into asset classes by you selecting your risk tolerance, and it automates the investing process that we go through, and then it automatically rebalances for you based on preset limits. And it's if you took the personal touch and the emotion out of our business, it would be
a robo. Yeah. Okay, well, this particular company programmed, and it's all done programmatically, they programmed it so the robo-advisor would select the ETFs that their company stock was in. They took that over the other ones that might be better performing or whatever so they could promote their own company. And that's the height of dumb, I think.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Vanguard's robo chooses Vanguard funds. So
yeah, but they're not going to get fined because they got really good funds. Headline five, the final problem involves short sales. For those of you who know what short sales are, you know that they're risky. If you don't know what they are, short sales where your broker will borrow the stock from somebody else and lend it to you, and you sell it.
Even though you don't own it.
You don't own it, but you sold it. But you had the stock in your hand for a moment, and then you sold it. So a little later, you buy it back because it works great as long as the stock went down. So what you buy back costs you less than what you borrowed. and then you repay the loan with the stock that costs less, you pocket the difference. Well, that works just fine until the stock goes up. And then all of a sudden, money starts bleeding on your short account. And if you've ever heard of a margin call, that's what triggers margin calls, when you've got to throw money into the account or sell a bunch of stuff that you don't want to sell. Well, if your stock is being loaned out, it better be with your permission. If you are borrowing to short it, it better be because you want to and you understand it. Worse yet, if somewhere in your account, either with or without you owning it, if it's being shorted and it's not being covered with a borrowed lot of stock to short it, you have to get out of there, and you have to get out of there real, real fast. So when you're out shopping, look for a few things. We always like the certified financial planners, and we like the fee-only model. And, of course, that's what we do because we set this business up to do it the way we want. Never write a check to the name of your advisor, or you can bet it's not going in one of those places where you can see it. Using an advisor will get you, if you get a good one, over time, a very much better return on your investment. It's been shown many times, but know what you're doing. All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.